arts really help us develop another side of our brain. I'd like to think that it helps us to develop the compassionate side of us. You know, New Orleans is one of those cities where either you're a musician or you have been heavily affected by the music. When I began with Roger Dickerson, you know, when I was a kid, that was an amazing time in my life. He taught me in such a way where everything that I had written or would write, I had to explain. Melody, counterlines, bass lines, I had to explain where they came from. There had to be some relevance to the original musical idea, which really started to make me understand about, you know, being concise. And that's what teachers do. That's what the good ones do. When it came time to go to college, I looked at a lot of schools. And what it really boiled down to was, who were the trumpet teachers? I stayed with Paul Jeffries before school started. And he was playing in Lionel Hampton's band at the time. And he took me on one of the gigs and told me to bring my horn. And the band is setting up and, you know, some of the trumpet players asked me to pull on my horn and play. And then Lionel Hampton walked up behind me and goes, hey man, let me hear you play a blues with the piano player. So I played the blues with him. And the next thing you know, I was in the band. It was an education being around those guys, you know, because they would all play on a high level, you know, everybody in that group. And I was the youngest guy in the group. And, you know, and it was interesting because they treated me with respect, but they treated me like a pro, like they had expectations. And I think that band really helped prepare me to be in Art Blakey's band.
The NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts, has wisely put trumpeter Terrence Blanchard on its 2024 list of jazz masters. And in this hour, we're going to celebrate that high honor, tee up the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, and talk about his Grammy Award-winning opera, Fire Shut Up in My Bones, now that I am pleased to welcome back to this program jazz master Terrence Blanchard. Terrence, my friend and brother, how are you today, man?
I'm all right, man. How you doing, man? It's been a while.
It has been a while. It's a blessing to hear your voice. I'm doing well. If I complained, I'd be an ingrate even today. So I'm just grateful to be in dialogue with you. It's, again, just a beautiful thing to hear your voice. And I already know where I'm going for the rest of the hour, because that clip that we played of you talking about being an NEA Jazz Master really sort of gives me a foundation that I can build on. And I think I want to start by interrogating you on this notion that you believe the arts can, music in particular, can help us to develop the compassionate side of our brains, the compassionate side of our being. If that's the case, we need more arts and more music, like right now, because the world is a scary and dangerous place. You take my point. So tell me more about your belief that it can help us to develop the compassionate side of who we are.
You know, I've seen it happen, Tavis. I mean, one of the things we have to remember is that we're still vibratory beings, man. And one of the things about music, you can't escape how some things make you feel. Some music can like lift you up. Some music can make you feel sad. Some music can make you reflect, you know, and I think it's all because of how those chords and melodies and rhythms vibrated within our souls. Mm. I've seen it, you know, when I did my album Breathless, and we were playing live in Cleveland, and the whole album was about gun violence in the country. And a guy came to my show, man, and he said, you know what? I was expecting to hear you play the music from A Tale of God's Will, which was the music from Spike Lee's documentary about New Orleans when the levees break. Mm-hmm. He said, but you started playing this other music and the music sounded angry. He said, but then you spoke and you told us what the music was about. And he said, I have to tell you, after hearing that and thinking the guy who created the music for When the Levees Broke is this angry about this topic, it's making me rethink my position on gun control. And that was a powerful moment for me, because then it was more confirmation of the power of music and the power of art.
I've always regarded you, I've told you this before many times, I say it again to this audience, I've always regarded Terrence Blanchard as the ultimate, the quintessential citizen artist. He is an artist, but he's a citizen artist, not afraid to engage. But who does an album about gun violence, Terrence?
Well, I mean, you got to remember at the time that this was happening, man, you know, I had originally put together the E-Collective to inspire young kids who wanted to play electronic music to play it on a high level. But when we were in rehearsal and we started touring in Europe, Mike Brown was shot. I mean, they were so, if you remember back then, it seemed like there were shootings every 2 months. It was just a thing that I couldn't turn my head away from. I couldn't put out music that would, be happy or celebrating anything when so many of our young men were losing their lives to gun violence. So, and at the time also, it wasn't really being talked about in the major media. We kept talking about 45 all the time. And I kept saying, we need to do something that in our little small corner of the world where we can continue to debate about what's going on in our country. And the entire band decided, to make that shift. And that's why we called the album Breathless. We wanted to continue to debate and have discussion. And as a matter of fact, when we did the second album, we couldn't leave it alone. So we actually went to three cities, Cleveland, Dallas, and Minneapolis, where there was incidents of gun violence, and try to have civic engagement in the city with the community, and then also do a live concert and record the music live. And that was the second album of the E Collective, and it's simply called Live.
And I was honored to have Terrence on the program when that Breathless project dropped, and I remember when it came across my desk, and I could hear that voice. I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. And then here comes Terrence Blanchard with this amazing project called Breathless. Let me just say once again, I've said it many times before, Terrence Blanchard is my kind. He's my kind of citizen artist. And he's always welcome to be on this program. It's always an empowering hour. And we're just getting started with Terrence Blanchard, who you're listening to right now, and I'm glad about it, on Tavis Smiley.
From the Merck Park with love, love, this love. Is Tavis Smiley. More honesty than you can handle.
More empowerment than you can imagine.
You're tuned in to Tavis Smiley. Smiley.
Worry on my mind, pain in my heart, ink in my pen. Where do I start? I need strength to move on, 'cause I'm getting weak. So many issues with no words to speak. I'm going crazy, trying to pick myself off the ground, ground, ground. And I've been getting lazy.
Speaking of the Breathless project, tell me about this track, Terrence Blanchard.
You know, the interesting thing about that track to me, man, it was actually written by my son. And he was going through a lot. He's a prolific songwriter. He's a great wordsmith. And he had lost one of his friends who had just come back from serving in the military to gun violence in New Orleans. Not only did he lose his friend was shot at a gas station, being robbed in New Orleans. And not only did that happen, but when he was in college, he was walking to school and a guy came home early to his house, and some dude ran out the back, and the wife said, claimed that somebody was breaking in, and said, what did he look like? Black guy with dreads. And he saw my son walking to school. Good thing is he didn't confront my son, but he did call the police, and seven cars showed up to the building at the school, cleared the building, perp walked my son out of the building. And if it wasn't for one of the cops who was a friend of mine, who literally grew up in the house right behind mine, our backyards shared a fence, my son would have went to jail. When Hal Amos saw my son, he said, I know this kid. He said, this kid didn't break in nobody's house. They went back and re-interviewed the woman, and her story started to break down, and come to find out she was having an affair. So all of those things had a profound effect on my son. And you started, and you can hear that in what it is that he's written in this song.
There's so many parts of that story that are arresting. I think the part I'm still processing through is the very beginning of the story and wrestling with the fact that your son's friend survived a war.
Yes.
But came home and died on the streets.
And died on the street. And that was the thing. I remember him talking to me about it, Tavis. And what do you tell your kid? I mean, he told me, he said, Dad, I really don't want to go outside. I really don't want to go out and hang out any place. You know what I mean? Because this guy was close to him. And it made the news. It was a big story in New Orleans, you know, but it was still a shame that a guy served his country and came back here and lost his life for something silly.
Yeah, no. Oh, that's a, yeah, I need to, I got to push my way through that story because I could stay there for 30 minutes just unpacking that thing. You said earlier, and obviously you are correct about this, that we are vibratory beings. What as an artist, what does that mean for you? It may be a strange question, but what does it mean for you that when you're writing music, when you're writing scores for beings who you already know are in fact vibratory?
Well, it's all about learning how to manipulate those how should I say it? The science part of it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, like major chords, obviously, you know, depict a certain kind of feeling and emotion, minor chords, so forth and so on. Mm-hmm. And then it's all about how to maneuver around those things and then actually reinterpret those things to kind of create emotion. You know, when I've written my opera, you know, it's one of the things that I was very, very cognizant of, you know, in terms of trying to tell Charles Blow's story, mm-hmm. is that, you know, I tried to use harmony and melody in such a way that could be really impactful telling a story. And we've been really blessed to have like great performers, great vocalists, amazing vocalists. And it's had an impact on the community in such a way that it's making me proud because first of all, the singers have taken ownership of it, Tab. It's almost like it don't belong to me anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the thing that's cool about it is that people of color have been showing up in large numbers. A lot of people have said they've never been to the Met before. It's the first time they've gone to an opera. And the beautiful thing about it also is that they've been buying tickets to other productions. Mm-hmm. So, and it's more evidence of what I've been saying in the art world. There's a demographic of people that we've been ignoring, you know, and the success of these operas is proof of that. Even with X that was done by Anthony Davis, mm-hmm. at the Met, it was also extremely successful. So, it's screaming out that we are much more than what people have tried to make us be. We are very diverse people with very diverse interests and attractions to the art.
Yeah. I as you were talking, particularly when you said X, in my mind just even went faster in this direction. I had the honor any number of times in his career of sitting for interviews with Ozzie Davis, the great Ozzie Davis. Pearly Victorious has been on Broadway. It's done amazing work, and Kenny Leon directed it, and the whole cast, Nate and the whole crew. It's just an amazing production of Ozzie Davis's work. But I had the opportunity to ask Ozzie Davis in his very last interview. Mm-hmm. It was so powerful, in fact, that his widow asked me to speak at Ozzie Davis's funeral. Mm. And we played some sound from his last interview, which happened to be with me on my PBS show then. And I had the chance, mm-hmm. to ask him, how does one approach writing a eulogy for Malcolm X?
Wow.
I just wanted to know, man. Speaking of Spike, your boy, and all the collabs you guys have done, how does, mm-hmm. one approach preparing to deliver a eulogy, yes. for Malcolm X? I wanted to know that answer. He gave it to me, laid it out for me. And so it leads me to ask you, when you have a story which is so fascinating, like the story of one Charles Blow, and yes, we're talking, mm-hmm. about that Charles Blow, writer for the New York Times. He wrote a book called Fire Shut Up in My Bones. And then somehow he'll tell the story. Terrence Blanchard was tasked to take that story and turn it into an opera. That opera is now Grammy Award winning. But I asked you the question I asked Ozzie Davis, how does one approach writing an opera about this kind of story?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about it, man, there were so many facets to the story that resonated in my life. You know, I mean, I wasn't sexually abused, mm-hmm. in any form or fashion, but, you know, the whole notion of being other, being different in your own community, mm-hmm. was something that I relate to because, you know, on Saturday mornings, walking to the bus stop with a horn in your hand and them little horn-rimmed glasses on was not the most popular thing to do in my neighborhood.
You know what I mean? Although, as you know, Terrence, everybody in New Orleans, it seems, has some kind of horn in their hand. I mean, everybody, it's right. New Orleans. Y'all all playing some kind of instrument down there, man.
I know, but they weren't on my block.
On your block, okay. Okay.
Yeah, they were playing football, baseball, or basketball, or something like that, man. And they used to make fun of me, man. Look at him going, where you going? You going to get through your lesson, you know? Mm-hmm. So that part resonated. The other part about being in the South and the culture of the South resonated for me. And, you know, the thing that I thought was, it was like with my first type of champion. The whole notion of just him struggling with his sexuality and being ostracized for it was something that's kind of silly to me. I mean, you know, in this day and age, we should be well past a lot of these issues, you know, and I get it for some people that, you know, there are fundamental things that it's hard for them to deal with. I understand that. I get it. But, you know, I thought about, look at the successful person that he's become. And that in itself should be an inspiration to a lot of people. So the thing that I started to do was try to find those core elements that I related to personally and draw upon how my feelings were about those things and allow those emotions to send me in a direction to tell me how the music should evolve. My composition teacher always told me, Roger Dickinson, he said, man, when it comes to composition, you got to learn how to listen because the music there and it's telling you. He said, but your ego can get in the way and say, oh man, but it's not this. It shouldn't be this. No. Just learn how to listen. The universe and the good Lord is always trying to use you for things that are bigger than us as individuals. And you just have to learn how to sit there and listen and receive.
Since you went there, let me follow you, because it's one of the things I wanted to ask about anyway, particularly given the brilliance of your comments on the occasion of being listed as a jazz master by the NEA for 2024. Again, we played some sound of that at the top of this conversation, so I wanted to ask you anyway, but since you went to Mr. Dickinson, let me just follow you down this path. I don't want to color the question any more than this, Terrence, but tell me more about your teachers, man.
You know, Tavis, man, when I look back on my life, you know, at this point in my life, I feel like I was blessed. Mm-hmm. My first piano teacher lived next door to me, dude, when I was 5 years old, so I could never miss a lesson. That was the first thing. You know, every Saturday, I just had to walk right around the corner. I mean, right around the house and go, I'm like, oh, my God. And then, you know, there was her name was Martha Francis. And then there was a woman named Louise Winchester. From the time that I was 12 years old, started teaching me music theory and ear training. And I didn't think that there was anything abnormal about that until I got to high school and realized so many other kids didn't have that. So I was already kind of ahead of the game, you know, based on what she was doing with me and what she saw necessary. And then my aunt took me to Roger when I was 15, and Roger didn't take high school kids. He only taught college kids. But because of Miss Francis, because of Miss Winchester, I had already started to develop those qualities, and he took me on as a teacher, man. And I remember one of my first lessons, he said, what do you see yourself doing 10 years from now? And it wasn't something that I thought about, because, you know, when you have that block mentality, bro, I wasn't thinking about the future, not at all. But because of him, you know, he made me sit down and ponder those things. And then I started to realize those things started to come to fruition in my life, because he made me visualize and then made me work hard. And when, you know, like I said earlier in one of the clips, everything that I wrote, I had to explain. There was no like, oh, pie in the sky kind of stuff. No. And then when I went to New York, he had me study with his friend, who was another great African-American composer named Hale Smith. And Hale Smith broke my piece down, bro, from the first lesson. He said, seems like you're trying to control a large amount of space, young man, without having the ability to control a small amount of space.
Ooh.
Which meant I needed to deal with detail, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And these were the guys, they are the unsung heroes, because they've created a lot of music that nobody's heard.
Yeah.
And it's an unfortunate thing. And when I started to become a film composer, I wanted to hire Roger just as an orchestrator, just to give him a check. You know, he wasn't going to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he told me. He said, no, that's not what this is about. He said, you're gaining experience in the film world to do something beyond that. And I didn't know what he was talking about. And then lo and behold, here comes the opportunity to write two operas.
Yeah. Amazing story. When you have a teacher who says what Hale said to you, how do you not take that personally? How do you not internalize that? I know so many people who can't handle that kind of critique.
Well, I've never been that person, man. For me, if I'm going to you, I want break me down.
Oh,
tell
yeah.
me
oh, yeah.
what it is I need to do. Tell me what it is where I'm. Tell me the things that I'm missing. You know what I mean? Because I want to be really great at what it is that I do. You know, so for me, it's not about having an ego or coming in and trying. Now, I'll tell you this: when I did study with Roger, you know, every week I tried to shut him up with my lesson. I tell you that. I was hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I would come in, and Tavis, it was the funniest thing. I would come in, and he would go, "Oh, that's great." And I'm like, "Oh, I got him." And he said, "Oh, that's great." And then he'd pull out that red pencil, and he'd go, "But right here." And I'm like, "God, man." You know what
I mean? You came in. I can show you, brother, and I can tell you. And even you did it, he still had something there. He still put out the red pencil.
Yeah.
I
yeah,
hear
you. He pulled it out. Yeah, man.
Well, that's what – yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying that's what we all need, man. Yeah. And at a time when we're talking about what's going on in the country right now, we need some hard truths, you know, that we need – up to, man. And when you have people like that in your life, I mean, who am I to sit down and talk to Hale Smith or Roger Dickinson and tell them what to do when they're some of the greatest minds in music?
I'll take a hard truth over a sweet lie any day of the week.
Yes, indeed.
A hard truth. I just give it to me straight, no chaser, man. I just want to know the truth, and I can wrestle with that, but just don't lie to me. Don't exploit me in that way, man. You said a moment ago, I got a minute and a half here. We'll continue when we come forward. But you said a moment ago that you've always wanted to be great, and that's why you've been so dedicated and so disciplined. You wanted to be great. I'm not going to ask you whether you think you're great, because I know you're too humble to even take that question. But let me just ask you, let me frame it this way. Where are you on your journey to greatness? What do you think you are?
It's hard to say because it keeps evolving. And, you know, it's one of those things. It's like when you start to accomplish things, you start to realize there are more things that you don't know and there are more things that you can learn. So for me, it's a never ending journey. And I feel blessed to be on it. Like, I've been playing with Herbie Hancock for the last couple of years, man, in his band. And like playing with him every night has been like a music lesson, you know, and it's got me back in the practice room, practicing my horn in a way that I haven't practiced in a long time, you know, and it's an inspiring thing. So for me, it's always trying to look to better yourself. And yeah. I'm going to tell you what my trumpet teacher used to tell me.
Hold that thought. When we come forward, I want to hear what your trumpet teacher used to tell you. I'm up against the clock. I want to hear what your trumpet teacher told you. When we come forward, I guess, is Terrence Blanchard, and his humility notwithstanding, he's just a great guy. I will tell you, he is great and has been for quite some time. But don't take my word for it. The NEA has listed him this year, 2024, as a jazz master. More with Terrence Blanchard when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
Unapologetically progressive. Unapologetically blind. Black. You're tapped into Tavis Smiley. Tavis Smiley. Smiley. Helping to make you the most knowledgeable person in your circle of friends. This is Tavis Smiley.
So Terrence Blanchard, a funny story here. I was, as you probably know, Prince and I were good friends. And one night in a performance, Prince called me up on stage and put me on the spot to sing this particular track with him. And I know the song, but, you know, I got through the first verse and then got through the chorus and the second verse. My nerves started sort of kicked in on stage in front of all these people. And I started to flub on the lyrics a little bit. And I look at Prince, we're live on stage. I look in his eyes, he looks back at me, and his eyes are motioning for me to look down. He's like, "Look down." His eyes are like, "Look down, look down, look down." And I look down, and there on the floor in front of his monitor was a teleprompter.
Right.
with all the lyrics. And I was dumbfounded. And after the show, we hung out as usual. And I said, "Negro, I never knew that you used a teleprompter." He said, "Tavis, I've written 100,000 songs, man. Some nights I just can't recall all the lyrics, man. I've written so many." Right. I shared that story to ask. When you hear compositions, you hear your stuff on the radio or elsewhere, you ever forget that you actually wrote that thing, man?
Dude, you know, we moved to this house in Woodland Hills, and my wife had the Terrence Blanchard radio station on, on one of those,
Sirius XM channels,
And man, and I'm sitting there going, "Who is that?" And she looked at me like I was a plumb idiot, man. I said, "Yeah, who is that?" She goes, "This you, fool." it gets to the point because you're so busy trying to grow and expand. Mm-hmm. A lot of those things you forget. I mean, that's happened to me on so many films. Listen, you know when it's really funny? Mm. When I'm working on a film and you have to write a lot of music real quick, and then you're writing for like a 70-piece orchestra, right? Mm-hmm. And man, I'm writing, I'm turning it in, writing, turning it in. And then you get to the session and I jump up on the podium and I look at this big piece of score with 70 people in front of me and I go, "I don't know what this is." And I have to like look at it real quick and I go, and I have to sing it to myself and I go, "Oh, okay, now I remember." Mm-hmm. Because I always forget, man. It's hilarious to me when it happens.
I'll just say this, it is a beautiful thing. We should all be so lucky to be so prodigious in our work product that we forget what we have produced. I met it, Terrence Blanchard or Prince. Love them both. All right, so you were about to tell us a moment ago what your trumpet teacher used to tell you. Pick it up from there, Terrence Blanchard.
Well, one of the things he always used to tell me all the time, he said, "Man, you always want to be gratified, never satisfied." Mm. And that was the thing. He said, "You always, you may be happy in the moment, but always knowing that there's more to do, and that's how I've been living my life. Because for me, I don't want to like get stuck. Miles Davis was one of my heroes, Herbie. I'll give you an example. So, when I first started playing with Herbie, this was back when Obama was running for president the first time, and we were on tour. And there was an arrangement that Herbie had done of his tune, One Finger Snap, right? Mm-hmm. No, I'm sorry, Speak Like a Child. Mm-hmm. And we had been playing that arrangement, and it was new. It was very different from the old Blue Note recording. And then one day, he jumped up on the piano doing sound check and started playing the old Blue Note recording, and the drummer and the bass player jumped up on the stage and they started playing with him, and it was really killing. It was amazing, right? And we're sitting there going, "Ooh," making all these sounds, so happy to hear Herbie play this. And Herbie jumped up, man, and he was just talking to himself, and he goes, "Man, that sounds so old to me." And it was like a wake-up call. Because all of a sudden we had to realize, yeah, that's old, man, that's old. But that's what it means, I think, to be a great artist, man, is to constantly push forward.
No, I this audience hears me say it all the time. There's always something I hold on to and I leave the show. And sometimes it happens in the first hour, sometimes second hour, sometimes the third hour, sometimes in all 3 hours. Sometimes I'm getting to the wire. And I'm like, okay, I need what am I holding on to today? And here it is in the third hour of the show today. And Terrence Blanchard shows up and gives me my thing for the rest of the day that I'll be noodling. And that is gratified, but never satisfied. That should be the mantra for all of us, that in life you are gratified, but never satisfied. I'm holding on to that one, brother. As a matter of fact, I'll start using it, and I'll give you attribution the first time I use it. And after that, it's going to be mine, Terrence Blanchard. It's going to be mine. I'm always...
Don't worry about it. R. Blakey always used to say to us, man, once you present an idea to the world, it belongs to the world.
There you go. Gratified, but never satisfied. That's mine now. That's mine now. You mentioned film, and all your film scores are earlier. I was online a couple of days ago, looking at something, and up pops this story of a bunch of photos. I love the paparazzi. They were in New York and they caught Spike and Denzel and Jeffrey Wright filming this new film. That Spike is doing, and I hadn't even thought about it, but when I read the story, if the story is correct, this is Spike's 25th feature film. He's worked with Denzel a number of times, but Spike Lee is on location, where else, in New York City right now, filming his 25th feature, and you work with him on a number of those things. I don't know if you're on this one with him, but just as you look back on Spike's career now and doing his, again, On Location right now with film number 25, you think what about your collabs all these years?
Man, it's been a blessing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of the things, you know, I remember when I saw She's Gotta Have It, you know, I was in a theater going to see another film. No. I went to see She's Gotta Have It in Chicago. And they did like a little pre-roll thing about him and who he was, because I had no idea who he was. And when I saw it, I kept saying to myself, man, you know what? I'd really like to work with somebody like that is so dedicated to their craft outside of what it is that I do to help me grow as an artist. And then lo and behold, you know, I'm in a room with him and we're working on all of these films. And it's been a journey because, you know, Spike, the way I score his films are totally different from most people. Spike doesn't like underscoring. You know, he always used to tell me, he said, look, man, I don't need the music to hit a door when the door slams or when, you know, he said, no. He said, I like thematic material. You know, I like themes running throughout all of the scenes. And I remember, you know, I forgot which film, I think it was Summer of Sam, we were working on, and there was a lot of information in this one scene. And I said, Spike, you sure you want me to write the theme there, man? Because there's a lot of stuff that's important to the development of the characters. And he goes, hey, man, it's been scientifically proven that the brain can concentrate on more than one thing at one time. And that I never asked him that question ever again. But what it did was it really helped me understand how part of what I was struggling with was needing to learn more about orchestration and how to use certain instruments that didn't get in the way of the voice, you know, and that changed the whole game for me. And then by the time we got to do, you know,
too many projects, see what I mean?
I know, he's done
so many projects. Okay, give me the storyline and I'll tell you the film. You give me the storyline, I'll tell you the film.
You know, but it was when we did Black Klansman.
Okay, then, Black Klansman.
The Five Bloods.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like everything we had been working up to, man, just like got us to that point. Yeah. And, you know, it's been a great experience working with him, man, because, you know, he's helped me to grow, you know, in my own craft, in my dealing with my own music and how I perceive things.
As I said earlier, Terrence Blanchard is such an humble guy, but I can assure you, if Spike were here, and I know this because Spike has told me this in our conversations, that he has helped Terrence Blanchard and Terrence Blanchard has helped Spike Lee. You don't put out a film without a soundtrack, without a composition. And so these two brothers have worked so beautifully and so majestically together over the years. I celebrate both of them, Spike on film number 25 now, and Terrence having worked so many times with Spike, he forgot what the project was, but it came back to him. But again, you're that prodigious, you forget stuff sometimes. But I'm gonna put Terrence on the spot when we come forward, and I do want to ask him if I made him, I ain't gonna say put a gun to his head, we just talking about gun violence, I ain't gonna be violent toward my brother, but I do want to ask him, put him on the spot and ask him, of all the collabs with Spike musically, Terrence Blanchard, what is your favorite Spike Lee collab? That part when we come forward with Terrence Blanchard on Tavis Smiley.
This is getting good.
Yeah, man.
Tavis Smiley continues when we come forward. May Fresh Daily in the Mert Park,
Los Angeles, California.
You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley and jazz master Terrence Blanchard, as denoted by the NEA. He is on the 2024 list of jazz masters, and they could not have been wiser in their decision-making. Before I talk to Terrence about the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, all right, I'll put you on the spot, Terrence. If I had to make you choose, of all the collabs that you and Spike Lee have done, you would choose what? You'd say what?
You know what? That is a tough one, man. You know, but I would probably have to go with the last one we did, the Five Bloods, you know, and the only reason for that is because we've been constantly growing as artists. And, you know, it was one of my favorite Spike Lee films to work on. I thought Delroy Lindo was masterful in his performance. You know, it was one of Chadwick Boseman's last performances, and I thought he was amazing in it. The entire cast was just amazing. And it was one of those things, I remember when Spike sent me the film, you know, which often happened when I worked on his stuff. I had like a, oh my God moment. What do I do? You know, because it seemed like everything else was done on such a high level. It can be intimidating at times, you know, but I had a lot of fun working on it, and there was a lot of gratitude, you know, in the finished product, because working with great actors like that and Spike was a blessing.
No, well, I'll tell you this: you acquitted yourself nicely, intimidation notwithstanding. You have acquitted yourself nicely on all those projects. So there's that. When we come forward in our remaining moments with Terrence Blanchard, we will tee up the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival coming up soon. I'm delighted to be in conversation just one more again in my career with the great, the jazz master, Terrence Blanchard on Tavis Smiley.
More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward. Let's get back to more of this rich dialogue with Tavis Smiley.
Fewer than 5 minutes left here in this conversation with Terrence Blanchard, about four to be exact. I could talk to Terrence Blanchard for hours. Always enjoy our dialogues, and I'm just grateful for the hour that he has given us once again. So let's talk finally here, Terrence Blanchard, about the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, one of my favorites, man.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, you know, the thing about it, you know, it feels, I mean, obviously it's my home, but the festival itself, whenever I'm there, feels like home. I remember the first one after the hurricane, driving up to the fairgrounds, man. I was so nervous about what was going to go down because, you know, the city had been just totally decimated and was wondering if people were going to come back. And man, a tear fell out my eye because I looked around and the place was packed with people who loved the music and loved the city so much that they came out and supported. And that always happens at Jazz Fest. I mean, Jazz Fest is kind of like, they need to call it like a homecoming, man, because, you know, you see people from around the world all the time at Jazz Fest, always having a great time. And the thing about it, we call it Jazz Fest, but they actually changed the name to Jazz and Heritage Festival because there's so many other different types of musics that are there. There's every type of Louisiana delicacy in terms of, you know, great food that you could imagine to experience, all different types of food, music. There's always stuff for young people, little kids. They have a tent for little kids to experience stuff. It's just a great time.
Yeah, it is an amazing time. The dates this year are April 25 through May the 5th. April 25 through May the 5th are the dates of the New Orleans Jazz Festival this year. It's a, if you've never been, it's an amazing festival. As I say, it's one of my favorites. You should check it out. I'm just curious. New Orleans is obviously home for you. Do you have a ritual? In other words, when you touch down in New Orleans, like, what's one of the first things you do consistently? Where are you going when you touch down?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, first thing I do is I go home and just relax for a little bit. If I haven't been there for a while, man, I have some friends that we always hang out at a certain friend's house, man, and we always just kick back. And it's the thing that I love about it, man, it's like very successful people. Some of them are judges, some of them are lawyers, some of them are business people, man. And we don't talk about none of that when we hang out. You know, we just sit back, talk about sports. One of the funny things about those dudes, they always talk about horticultural stuff, and it cracks me up because I'm sitting there going, you know, we'll be just chilling. All of a sudden, somebody will say, "Hey, man, your magnolias look really beautiful today." And I'm like, "Dude, you know, come on, man. Can we have a little better conversation than that? You know? Oh yeah, but see what I do, man, is I take this. You got to put this in the soil, man, and that makes them bloom. It's crazy. I know that's probably, hey man, look, I know that's probably disappointing. It's
No,
not
that's
worth
Nola, man. I love it. I love it. I love it. I want to mention, speaking of Nola, and I think he's on, let me just pull it right quick. I think he's on the program. See if I can find him real quick, but I'm running out of time here. What's today? Today is Monday. I'm trying to see if I can see it, if I can see it, if I can see it. Yeah, it's Wednesday. So we are honored in New Orleans to be heard in New Orleans. So you're being heard in, of course, we're syndicated, but you're being heard in New Orleans right now on our friend Wendell Pierce's station, WBOK. WBOK, 12:30 a.m. So Wendell Pierce, the great actor, owner of that station. So we are honored to be on his station in New Orleans. And he's my guest on this show, I think, on Wednesday. Wednesday in my final hour, Wendell Pierce. Brilliant thespian.
Tell him I said what's up.
I will indeed. The Windows, our guest on, I find Lyra on Wednesday. But for now, we thank and congratulate. He's received every honor there is, it seems. But they keep finding more stuff to give him because he keeps earning it. He's deserving of every bit of it. And so the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts, has denoted and honored Terrence Blanchard this year as a 2024 Jazz Master. And we couldn't be happier about it. All the best to you, Terrence. I love you. Ain't nothing you can do about that. Hope to see you soon, my friend.
Hey, man, love you too, man. It always goes by rather quickly when we get together, so we got to do it more often, man.
Indeed, indeed. That's our show for today. Back here tomorrow, Lord willing, to do it all over again. Until then, thanks for tuning in. The Tab is Smiley, and as always, keep the faith.